This is the Bitcoin Magazine Twitter space. And today, as the title would suggest, we're going to be talking about what the fuck is happening with the Bitcoin price and the Bitcoin markets. The title is slightly inflammatory by design. Dylan.
What's up, P? What's up, CK? Exciting times. Well, I mean, actually quite boring, but you know, this recent pullback has been nice, to say the least, for stackers.
Absolutely. Also want to take a moment to shill the Bitcoin conference, Bitcoin 2022. It's going to be absolutely amazing. If you do not have a ticket yet, prices do increase each month, and it's going to be the largest Bitcoin event in the world. The speakers that I'm lining up are absolutely incredible. You do not want to miss it. There's a lot of different promo codes floating around. You can choose whichever one you want. The one that I think is the funniest is, of course, the one that I made, which is HFSP, which stands for, of course, Have Fun Staying Poor. So if you use that, you'll save 10%. CK, is there anything you want to add to that?
The Bitcoin conference is going to be amazing. We are whipping P every single day to sign the best speakers possible, and he is living up to expectations. So have no fear. P is putting on a fantastic lineup, and the event is going to be absolutely unreal. Bitcoin 2021 was unreal, and 2022 is, we're going for a 3X plus an additional music festival. So, I mean, what's not to love? Get your ticket now. Past performance does not really mean much, but historically, Bitcoin conference tickets do at least track Bitcoin price, if not outperform. So this is not investment advice, but you know, just holding off, waiting for Bitcoin to moon might not be the best play. Really excited to talk to Dylan about what's happening in the market. You know, price briefly hit 58K, which is a wonderful meme number. And I'm sure that him and Sam have a lot to break down, as well as talk about, you know, all the things that they look at and talk about on the deep dive.
So there's four things that we're going to be going through with the deep dive crew. The first is on-chain dynamics, accumulation, and distribution. We're going to go through the recent pullback, start of the correction, or just a leverage flush. Then after that, we're going to talk about, how does the cycle play out? Is there a top in December, or an extended bull run, or maybe something even crazier? Finally, talking about macroeconomic backdrops, the landscape, and the dollar rising versus other currencies.
Oh yeah. So I think, just to start, everybody is probably wondering, 68K all-time high. We're sitting at 60 something thousand right now. Is this a double top? Are we just in a bull market pullback? And then, well, why is price selling off? So there's a couple of reasons, and we're going to go in depth on those. But from our view, Sam and I, who do the deep dive as well as work with UTXO Management, which is a Bitcoin denominated hedge fund of sorts, we're thinking that this is just a pullback, just a leverage, short-term kind of thing. So I guess that's, you know, our broad thinking, but we can go into why we think that as well. Sam, what do you think about just the last couple of days? How are we looking at this?
Yeah, I think that's totally fair assessment. Kind of, we agree in the same way. If you look at a lot of the action over when we've had these price movements of when we're hitting all new all-time highs, and we're pulling back again in the 60K range, there's just been a lot of derivatives, liquidations in the market that are whipsawing back and forth. So when you start looking at those and you go, okay, is this going to start to be a broader trend in the market, a broader sell-off? We go back to the on-chain dynamics, the accumulation for the first, the distribution phases. And so everything that we're seeing there is still the same type of picture. We're not seeing this larger sell-off happening on-chain. We're not seeing, you know, these bullish dynamics being reversed. So really looking for that confirmation, that confluence of other data of what's going on. So I think it's a pretty fair assessment to say, one, we've seen a lot of derivatives markets liquidations over the last couple of weeks, and this consolidation in this 60K range right underneath all-time highs. I know people want it to rip, but being patient, having like a longer consolidation here can lead to like a more extended cycle as well. So it's two sides of the way to look at it.
You know, in Bitcoin, there's no free lunch, right? And so you essentially, everybody, when Bitcoin breaks all-time highs, last couple of times, got really excited. Everybody, as in traders with a lot of Bitcoin on these derivative exchanges, and they essentially were leveraged speculating on the price to continue to go up. And you know, because there is no free lunch, because Bitcoin is this global market that is absolutely free, you're going to see those traders try to get liquidated by other players that are, you know, examining what's going on. Players that are bullish on Bitcoin, you know, at certain times will be selling every second of the day because they're trying to force basically others to have to close their positions, have to liquidate their derivative positions. And so this is just one of those times where I think you're going to see price just consolidate until the derivatives market gets off sides to the short side. And I think that's when it starts to get fun and we'll get ripping up here.
Yeah, and we'd be a lot more concerned, and we can go into some of what we're seeing on this, if you have these two groups, short-term holders and long-term holders. If long-term holders were participating in this price sell-off and putting that sell pressure on the market with what we're seeing from derivatives, I think that's a lot more to be concerned about, but we're really not seeing that.
And can you talk about how those groups are kind of differentiated? Like, what are the various groups that you just talked about mean specifically?
These are classifications that Glassnode has worked on. So a lot, you'll hear long-term holders for short-term holders from a lot of on-chain analytics. And someone might hear long-term holders and say, oh, that, you know, that's someone who's been holding for 2, 3, 4 years, or they're never selling their Bitcoin. And that certainly might be the case. But there's some statistical probability analysis behind to show that a long-term holder is classified right at the point where a coin has not moved for 155 days. So right in that 5 to 6 month kind of period. And then short-term holders are the other side of that equation. So it might be a little less than what you think when you hear long-term holder, but that's kind of how the two groups are defined.
Yeah, you nailed it there. I mean, it's just, the probability that a UTXO is spent, meaning UTXO is an unconfirmed Bitcoin transaction output. I just messed that up, the official term for UTXO. But basically, when a UTXO is spent, that is Bitcoin moving on chain. And so after 155 days, the probability that it's spent over time continues to get lower and lower and lower. You know, if you look at examine the UTXO set over the entire course of Bitcoin. So that's why, you know, we can kind of quantify these, you know, long-term and short-term holders with, it's, you know, sounds like an arbitrary threshold, but there's really a lot of math and stats behind it.
So where are we now?
In terms of like the on-chain side of things, the reason that, you know, Sam and I, the deep dive, the fund that we're working with aren't bearish in terms of this recent 7-8K pullback, 9K down to the 50s is because of a couple of things. Is one, the macroeconomic backdrop and how since basically March of 2020 it has changed forever. And, you know, MMT gone mad, QE infinity forever. You know, we don't see these dynamics changing over the long term at all. And actually, we, you know, think they'll continue to accelerate despite the Fed jawboning. And so because of that, our thesis is that we're in some sort of secular adoption trend for Bitcoin as it's kind of crossed this threshold of macroeconomic significance. And so we're looking at this on-chain data, and despite price rising to former April all-time highs, you're really not seeing like the classic bull market profit taking the sense that old coins are distributing to new coins. These UTXOs that haven't moved in a long time are not hitting the open market. And whether those are economic sells or not, you know, we've seen that when these old coins exchange hands, there's been downwards pressure, you know, at the top. So when you're seeing all these old coins distribute. And so we're not even there yet. I mean, there's been a little bit of a very little amount of profit taking after that all-time high was broken last week or 2 weeks back, whatever it was. But you're not seeing the classic bull market, you know, distribution, millions of Bitcoins at a time, like we saw in 2017, like we saw leading up to the April market top. Because of those two things, the macro and the on-chain, you know, this derivative market kind of washing out and price action volatility, if you will, is actually encouraging because, you know, we're using it. I'm personally using it to accumulate more Bitcoin. And I know, you know, a lot of what we're doing, we're very positive about the long term.
I definitely have the experience every time the price drops, I'm like, oh, thank God, I have a little bit more time. I just need a little bit more time to buy cheaper Bitcoin.
100%.
I feel the same way. And like Dylan mentioned, you know, we're right off the back of this major accumulation stage. And what we're looking for is that distribution where long-term holders are going to sell coins to new market entrants that are coming in, or elsewise, they're just going to be content with holding and what they're doing. And we've seen signs of maybe that distribution starting to take place, but very light, very small, you know, just starting to kick off, if anything.
Fascinating. What are your thoughts on the recent pullback? Like, what exactly happened there? What are the mechanics involved? And what the hell is a leverage flush?
Yeah. So, I mean, essentially what derivatives, what futures, what leverage, what's all kind of synonymous. We're basically saying that you're levering up, you're you're directionally betting on the price of Bitcoin, oftentimes juicing up your return by essentially borrowing money. It's a synthetic form of borrowing money you don't have, is what leverage is in the Bitcoin markets. And some exchanges, you can do it even 100-to-1. So if the price of Bitcoin goes up 1%, you double your money. And if it goes down 1%, you're liquidated, you lose everything. And so we're not seeing 100x leverage across the market. And, you know, very few traders and funds use anything more than 2x, at least the good ones. But leverage can kind of exacerbate these moves. And so that's what we're seeing, like we said a little bit earlier. It's just these directional bets that are juiced with money that isn't theirs. You know, those are washing out, and that, you know, the market's going from being basically in the derivative side of things much more long bias over the past couple days or week to basically neutral right now, which is good to see. And so, you know, we're kind of good to resume chugging upwards if we see more of this.
What metrics are you kind of looking at that indicate that you've gone neutral? Is it Bitfinex, or where are you kind of seeing this ratio?
Yeah, so for the most part, we're just looking at funding rates. So there's, in the Bitcoin derivatives or futures market, there's the perpetual swap contract, but there's also, which is the most liquid of the Bitcoin derivative products. And then there's like quarterly futures, which are every 3 months, and monthly futures expirations. And then there's, you know, options, but that's much less of an impact. And so, you know, with a perpetual swap, it's basically every 8 hours, it's a perpetual. So it's a futures contract that never expires, which was before it was invented. It was kind of an oxymoron, a perpetual future contract. So every 8 hours, because this futures contract never expires, simply rolls over. Regarding where that contract is trading relative to the spot market, there's a funding rate, which longs pay shorts or shorts pay longs, bulls pay bears, etc., depending on that rate. And so when that rate's positive, you're seeing bulls are paying sometimes, you know, recently, you know, 70% annualized over the course of an 8 hour period to bears just to remain long on the notional position size. And so that's significant, right? And so you'll see those things kind of reset like we've been seeing. And so perpetual futures, it's something that's kind of hard to understand if you're just coming in. But a lot of times those contracts and the dislocations in those markets is what causes these kind of like intraday, intra-week moves. But, you know, like under the surface, the spot dynamics are really what drive it long-term.
Dylan, can you, and just for like the newbies out here, can you or Sam explain kind of the differences between the expiration, the perpetual swap, and maybe kind of how generally futures contracts work?
Sure. Yeah. So like, if you think about, there's futures in every market where you're betting on or locking in some type of future price in a commodity or kind of any type of resource that you can do. And Bitcoin is the same way. You know, you can say the Bitcoin price is in the future, it's going to be X amount in 1 month. And then you can buy contracts in that way that it's going to be that. So you can use that kind of to hedge positions or to get other Bitcoin exposure in that way. From the perpetual side, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, Dylan, but this is very unique, was created like for Bitcoin or, you know, kind of cryptocurrency markets. But this is essentially a way to keep the futures contract going all the time. So in a typical futures contract, you'd have some type of period of expiration or rollover or something that you'd have to change the terms, whether it's 1, 3 months or in between, whatever it is. But in perpetual, it's ongoing constantly. So resetting that every 8 hours, it's not saying like you're going to end the contract in 6 months or 3 months.
And one question, I think I've actually asked this before, but is a perpetual futures contract, does it function similar to like an ETF that is based on futures, or it's not, right? It doesn't rely on other futures contracts and just have mechanics that roll it. It is actually its own distinct thing, correct?
Yeah. So it's its own synthetic asset. And what keeps it tethered to the spot price is the funding rate. So the funding rate, yep, is the mechanism which kind of allowed this contract to be built. Arthur Hayes, of former CEO of BitMEX, he was the one that actually created this market.
Got it.
He created the first perpetual contract.
Whereas traditional futures contracts are designed to allow people to hedge, or they were originally designed to allow, you know, producers of commodities, you know, if you are producing soybeans and you want to lock in your price, you can sell a futures contract to a consumer of soybeans, it, you know, 6 months from now, and basically you are guaranteed that, you know, that certain price. But then as everything has gotten more and more financialized, futures have been used, you know, more and more and more as a leverage play. You know, miners, I imagine, use futures to hedge their risk, you know, during times of volatility, basically because they have to pay a certain cost to produce their Bitcoin. They can sell futures contracts if they choose to and then lock in that price so they don't lose money if they're worried about doing so. But is there any non-leverage utility in a perpetual futures contract, or is it purely just a leverage play? It's purely a leverage play, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most exciting thing here and the reason that, you know, futures contracts are and derivatives and all this stuff is exciting at all is because we're Bitcoin is ultimately the most basic sense it's money.
Yeah.
We're building out in real time and people are like, no, the degens, like leverage needs to be reduced. It's like, no, this is a free market for money. If you don't allocate your capital correctly, meaning if you don't take your money and if you can go 100x long on Binance and you lose everything you have, obviously don't do that. But you have no more capital. And so like ultimately we're building out a market for money and all of this stuff that's, you know, arising and the leverage and the volatility, like it's a free market phenomenon. And so we're literally creating, you know, free capital markets on a global scale. At the same time, you're seeing like this, you know, exponential technology trend beneath it, which makes it, you know, all the volatility over the short term not matter in the long term. It's up and to the right, you know, on a logarithmic scale.
Yep, for sure.
So Dylan, you talked about the long versus short ratio going pretty neutral versus being kind of out of weight bullish. What does that indicate to you moving forward? Is that a bullish sign? And is that like a setup for the price ripping more? Or is that something that could actually indicate potentially going bearish?
Yeah, I mean, so basically these rates are fluctuating like technically every 8 hours, but the next funding rate is actively being priced every second based on how these derivatives are the perpetual swaps are positioned. So what we're looking at now is like, it's, you know, basically pretty neutral for, you know, today or the next 8 hour period. And these things, these dislocations usually don't happen over 8 hours or 24 hours, but build up underneath the surface kind of, whether there's, you know, spot market inflows, like Michael Saylor going out and saying, you know, I'm going to buy 20,000 Bitcoin over the course of 2 weeks and be in the market every second. Like that's what actually drives the price. And so when you see these kind of futures grind up, or like, you know, when we hit the all-time high last week at 68,000 or whatever, you basically saw a huge increase in open interest and perpetual swap, basically longs hitting the market. So like that's kind of what's driving it. So because of the macro, because of the on-chain, because of the narrative around inflation, we think that there's going to be strong spot market inflows over the next week, month, 3 months, year, 3 years, which is why we you know, sound perma bullish despite whatever percent pullback we're currently in. And really what happens in the market the next week or even month is why we kind of are always bullish, just because of all of these things. So, I mean, the market, the derivatives market going neutral right now is a good thing. But you'll see in bull markets that there's some greed even in the derivative markets. But if there's so much spot market inflow, it doesn't really matter. Like from January 2021 to, you know, middle of February, end of February, like basically straight from 20 to 40K, the entire derivatives market was like extremely levered long. But it didn't matter because there was just such a large inflow of new capital coming in the spot market. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see that coming out, but it's nice to see the market kind of settle down a little bit and come more neutral from the derivative side.
So I'll let P ask the next question, but I do have one more follow-up about today's deep dive. You dropped it just 30 minutes ago, titled Leverage Dynamics and Equity Correlation. Do you guys want to touch on what you covered on that article?
Totally, yeah. So I wrote a piece today on kind of these rising Bitcoin equities correlations with U.S. equities. And this is a trend that we've seen over 2021 on the correction side. So lastly, we wrote about this was back when there was a lot of Evergrande concerns and that we saw some kind of more macro corrections playing out. And if you go back to the macro corrections throughout the year, when the S&P 500 has dropped, you know, in excess of 4 or 5%, you see Bitcoin falling with it. So, you know, I have to remember that U.S. equities are a $54 trillion market. You know, Bitcoin is still only $1 trillion. Bitcoin is still finding its place in terms of its market narratives. There's a lot of them, and it depends on really where it's at, of, you know, whether it's kind of an inflation style hedge or a safe haven asset? Or is it more of like a risk on speculative investment that moves with the S&P 500? So lately we've seen an increasing trend of correlation in somewhere like 0.4 of S&P 500 and Bitcoin, kind of correlated moves over the last few months. So I think the kind of growing question kind of has been for me for like the second half of the year is, okay, Bitcoin cycle is kind of this bull cycle is primed from an on-chain perspective, from what we're seeing on chain. But what would happen in terms of a macro correction style event? So what's going to happen with the S&P 500 over the next two quarters, especially something to watch as Bitcoin increases that correlation right there. So trying to talk about a lot of those macro dynamics that we're seeing and seeing play out. And I think at the end of the day, we get to kind of this long-term conclusion that the U.S. stock market has really become more of a matter of national security for the United States. So these type of corrections playing out are typically going to come with a lot more stimulus or backing from the government and the Federal Reserve to support that market growth, because that's what we've been doing for the last decade and what we've been trying to do to stop a kind of broader market credit collapse and recession. And I think with that, you know, it just gives more time for more money to kind of and more capital and adoption to flow into Bitcoin. I think it's really got to keep growing at that level of, you know, we saw signs of it being an inflation hedge over the last couple of months. But I think there's a lot of conflicting narratives of what it is in the market and what it is to kind of many people and what it is at net for the market.
Well said, my man.
I had kind of just like a general question. I'd kind of like to know what Dylan and Sam's kind of work background is. So as far as like how you go about the research for when you're doing a daily dive, like what does that work look like for you guys on a daily basis?
I spend a lot of time on Twitter, a lot of time, not like a little bit in Telegram, but just, I mean, I scroll through, you know, some charts on TradingView and Glassnode, just, you know, Bitcoin. Looking at just like, you know, for like, you know, equities, like really kind of every asset class I like to keep an eye on. And then for like the Bitcoin market in particular, looking at, you know, derivatives, looking at price action itself is a big tell about what's happening. But, you know, a confluence of those things across on chain, off, you know, across derivatives. So I'm looking at Glassnode for a lot of the on chain accumulation trends. But a lot of times, like, looking at Twitter, and the coolest thing about Twitter is you can follow, you know, some of the smartest people in the world and most knowledgeable people, regardless of Bitcoin or not, for free. And, you know, if they're really good, you can turn on post notifications and all this stuff. So I spend a lot of time on Twitter kind of seeing what other smart people have to say about other things, and then kind of doing my research around that with the suite of tools that we have access to.
Dylan kind of said exactly what I was thinking, which is follow a lot of smart people from a lot of different lenses on Twitter that come up with a lot of data and chart background, kind of logic framework that are talking about the markets, whether it's the macro environment market or talking about inflation or talking about US equities. And then just trying to take in as much data dump as you can. So Glassnode is huge for that. Looking at the price action on tools like TradingView and kind of other tools there. Looking at the derivatives markets and the funding rates every day. So I think, you know, largely in the morning, just trying to take in as much information and condense that and find what is maybe the most appealing thing to talk about that or what might be, you know, really valuable for people that we're writing today with like what the market sentiment is and trying to gauge that.
That's pretty cool. I mean, you guys probably trudge through a lot of data, it sounds like, and then you filter it down to some extremely pure signal in like a daily format. That's pretty dope. You know, when I spoke to you guys, I know you said that you learned a lot from kind of just reading and following people that do similar things, but I didn't know you guys used specifically Twitter on a daily basis like that. That's pretty cool.
Who are some of your guys' favorite follows? What are you talking about? You have no free time. I know I work you way harder. And that it's just part of your job to be on Twitter. One of the perks of being an analyst for Bitcoin Mag and UTXO. But curious what some of y'all's favorite follows are for those who are looking to do their own research.
I mean, off the top of my head, I love Preston Pish and his work and podcasts and his thoughts on things. Lynn Alden is a fantastic follow. She puts out great stuff around Bitcoin, but also just the broader macro environment. I'm missing a bunch. I mean, my buddy Will does some great work on chain. Willy Woo is like the OG on-chain guy. I mean, he literally went into the UTXO set on his own Bitcoin full node in like 2013 and was digging out data around that. In terms of the market, I mean, there's so many people to name. I couldn't even remember off the top of my head, but just kind of connecting, networking with people that are on this app has gotten me basically a full-time career in this Bitcoin space. So I think just for anyone out there, like, just don't limit yourself to, you know, how much you can learn, because there's a lot out there.
I'd agree with a lot of those follows. A lot of the Glassnode on-chain analysts are great. Lynn Alden, Preston Pish. I like Charles Edwards, who does a lot with Bitcoin. And then maybe for like a macro person that if you want to dig into more in-depth charts and data is Jury and Timmer at Fidelity. You know, they kind of led up a lot of the Bitcoin research on the Fidelity side. So they're always tweeting about the intersection of macro and Bitcoin.
Good stuff. Next topic. What do we think about how this specific cycle plays out? Are we going to see a top in December, extended bull run, super cycle, hyperbolic cycle, ice cycle, glacier protocol? These are words.
Hey, what do you think?
What do I think? Well, yeah. I mean, I am profoundly unqualified to answer this question, but that is not going to stop me. I think people love to talk about a super cycle dynamic. I think that we are probably not going to see that this time. I think that the market dynamics are changing, though. You know, I think that the four-year halving cycles have been a key component of the price of Bitcoin for its entire existence so far. But I also think that we are in a very different world right now. And as nation states and huge companies are converting more and more of the value that they wish to keep and not have inflated away by centralized banks and governments, I think that is going to potentially shift the way that these cycles play out. So I would not be surprised if we kind of see a peak in spring-ish, but not. I would not be surprised if we don't see the traditional like gigantic 60-70% correction, especially given the sort of lead up we've already had here. You know, as you mentioned, or someone mentioned earlier in the conversation, these corrections, or the correction we had from, you know, 64 down to, you know, 30, like all that does is it creates a much stronger setup in the future. So I won't be surprised if we just kind of continue going up through the end of this cycle.
Yo, what is going on, plebs? We're going to take a break from our programming to tell you about the resurrection of our print magazine, starting with the El Salvador issue. Starting this fall, Bitcoin Magazine will be available on newsstands nationwide and at retail stores such as Barnes and Noble. Don't want to get off your couch though? No problem. You can also go to store.bitcoinmagazine.com. So skip the line and get each issue shipped directly to your front door with our annual subscription. I'm talking 4 issues a year that contain exclusive interviews and profiles with leading Bitcoiners, actionable insights on the state of the market, breaking news and cultural trends, along with powerful photos and artwork from the best artists in the world. Subscribe today and get 21% off using code podcast at checkout. That's PODCAST, podcast at checkout.
The world of crypto can seem like the Wild West sometimes. Soaring highs, crashing lows, celebrity shills, and new coins popping up seemingly out of nowhere every day. Look, we get it because we've been there before. At Bitcoin Magazine, we aim to filter out the noise and help newcomers concentrate on the signal. That's why we focus on Bitcoin only. Learning about Bitcoin may seem intimidating at first, but we've worked hard to break things down in a simple and digestible format that anyone can understand. Bitcoin Magazine has launched a free 21-day email course that teaches you about the fundamentals of Bitcoin. You'll receive one new lesson each day that covers a brand new topic as we guide you down the Bitcoin rabbit hole with quick and easy 3 to 5 minute reads. Not only do you get the free course, but everyone who completes the quiz at the end will earn some free Bitcoin. Start learning and earning Bitcoin today. Visit b.tc/21 days to enroll.
Tough. There's the historical context, which is that every 4 years there's some sort of blow off top, and then an 80%+ correction with an extended bear market, which is very much still possible. We were talking about this last week. I just kind of struggled to see a situation where people sell assets for fiat, right? So I would think that a lot has to change from a macro perspective for that to come into play. But at the same time, we don't know how big this bubble can go. So maybe the bubble is just so astronomical that an 85% correction is going to happen, regardless of the fact that fiat is trash and no one wants to actually be in fiat. So we'll see. I mean, you could say that the equity bubble and the housing bubble are already astronomical and those bubbles aren't popping. So I think it's uncharted territory. I'd be curious to hear what you and Sam, what Dylan and Sam think about, you know, the different kind of possible scenarios and which ones you're kind of giving the most weight to.
I would just say that when Bitcoin kind of chops around like this, it's a good thing. I get excited, especially when it pulls back and you just kind of see like the more consolidation that Bitcoin has, if Bitcoin's price action isn't going parabolic, I kind of think that we're, you know, we have further upside. Or like, you know, essentially like you can think of it as the spring is coiling, because there are holders, there's stackers that are basically buying up a percentage of this free flow of coins that are ever going to touch the market every single day. And so when Bitcoin, if Bitcoin goes to 98K by then in November, like plan B, we kind of predicted, you know, in the middle of summer at like 30K there, you know, disclosure, I don't think that's the case, unfortunately, but I think there's a probability there would be much more likely to be some sort of top or some sort of blow off top. But, you know, if Bitcoin continues to just grind higher, you see kind of this institutional adoption of this, of the asset class, and they, you know, chase the price higher, especially if it hits like a corporate level of adoption, like we saw, like we're continuing to see with MicroStrategy and all the Bitcoin miners that are IPOing, that kind of trend is very bullish. But, you know, the reality is if Bitcoin could have just, you know, have rounded tops and rounded bottoms like it kind of had over the course of 2021, and it could just do that for, you know, the next 5 or 6 years, and eventually it just becomes too much of the everything bubble, and the everything bubble of fiat currency just collapses upon itself. When do we hit that threshold is anyone's real guess, but eventually Bitcoin, as a function of this kind of fiat monetary system, everything bubble, eventually gets to the point where the popping of the Bitcoin, you know, local bubble itself, you know, the Bitcoin derivatives market, and, you know, there's this big liquidation flush like there will be at some point in the future. If Bitcoin's a $5 trillion or a $10 trillion asset, well, that's going to pull everything else down with it. And it's almost like Bitcoin's price at that point will be just a function of how much money the Fed and other global central banks are pumping into the system. And so I don't think we're there yet. But the more we just kind of grind and upwards and consolidate and don't go vertical, like everyone kind of, you know, under the surface, everyone kind of, even if they don't want to admit it, they want, it's honestly a good thing, because I think, you know, it makes me more bullish and think that we have further upside.
Good stuff.
Sam, do you agree?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point of this continued consolidation without this really quick parabolic move, kind of what goes up must come down. I mean, for a while, I've always looked at the previous halving cycles and kind of the cycle multiples. So when you look at a low price in a cycle compared to where the price is today, and looking how far that can run, and looking how close this cycle compares to previous ones, I've always thought, okay, I'm going to believe that it's following this halving cycle trend until I see in the data otherwise. But it's interesting, of all of the institution positions that are coming on, and you start to think about, okay, are those going to be 3 to 6 month type trading positions? Some of them might, but a lot of them are probably going to be longer term holding plays. And I think also what's interesting is just the rise of public miner institutions and the amount of Bitcoin that they're committing to hold this year, which is kind of a big paradigm shift as well, which puts less sell pressure on the market. So I think I would lean more in the camp of that this so far, and we'll see how it goes through December, is that can look like a much longer extended bull cycle play, who knows, into middle next year or earlier in that. So we'll see, but we're definitely not seeing the type of parabolic moves quite yet that we saw in previous cycles.
Forgive me if I'm incorrect on this, but a four-year cycle in Bitcoin terms is 210,000 blocks, and we've already passed 210,000 blocks from the last blow-off top in 2017. Is that correct? And have you guys noticed that?
Yeah, I'm not sure on the count or how many blocks that is, but in terms of where we've been at the cycle from, if you look at like 2013 to 2017 to now, you see these same uptrend movements in terms of percent movements, but they're muted every single year and they just take longer. So it's kind of like this, the cycles are lengthening, they're taking longer, there's less price upside because a lot of the price upside, you know, you're going to have diminishing returns as this thing goes. It's, you're still going to have, you know, 150% CAGR returns, but it's not going to be like what it was in 2013, 2017. But there certainly is a trend of these price movements just taking kind of longer in terms of blocks or days.
The only reason I brought that up is I feel like if that, you know, is actually accurate, it kind of cements or it confirms what you just said about potentially the cycles elongating. Something that I've noticed in, and you know, my good friend Bitcoin Tina has mentioned this several times, but you know, the difference between this Bitcoin cycle and previous ones is one, macro, but two is Bitcoin is a legitimate asset. You know, even in 2017, there was very, very, very few people outside of diehard Bitcoiners who, you know, were kind of saying like, Bitcoin is digital gold, Bitcoin is a hedge, Bitcoin is a legitimate asset. And, you know, that I was talking to my uncle last night and he was, you know, asking me about Bitcoin and how he can get in. He was saying like, if Bitcoin makes complete sense, there's, you know, lack of trust in the system. And, you know, he would have laughed at me 4 years ago. So I think that's just an anecdotal example of, you know, how things are changing in the minds of the average person, the average investor. So I feel like that could confirm that this time is different, although that's always a very dangerous statement to make. What do y'all think of Bitcoin being a legitimate asset? And, you know, if that matters, at least this time.
Yeah, I mean, the legitimization of Bitcoin, you know, we've been screaming from the hilltops for years that like, everyone bends the knee. And I think that's absolutely playing out and it's absolutely true. And, you know, of course, as is always the case, there will be like wild explanations for like, well, I mean, when you said it earlier, it was a ridiculous statement because I didn't think you were right. But now that I think you're right, it's a totally reasonable statement. But I think that is significant. And as more and more people jump in, it creates a higher and higher floor.
I mean, how many people on stage became a Bitcoiner after their first touch point with it? I know I didn't. It took like two or three before I kind of dug in.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. The third time I liberally applied it to my body, that was when it really hit me how important it was. But I do rub Bitcoin all over myself at least twice a week.
It's part of the daily regimen.
Yeah, sats a day keeps the doctor away. At least 37.
That's right. The final topic that we had agreed on, Dylan, was the macroeconomic backdrop and the macroeconomic landscape and kind of talking about how the dollar's rising versus other world currencies. One thing that I think is really interesting is that one way that inflation is hidden from us or from the average person is that most people tend to look at the price of US dollars versus other world currencies. And people tend to say like, oh, you see, like it's not so bad. But the reality is like when all centralized banks are just massively inflating away or trying to massively inflate away their debt, your frame of reference becomes profoundly distorted. Because if everything is screaming up at the same time in terms of inflation, then it can kind of seem like nothing is.
Yeah. I mean, if you're looking at the US dollar index, the DXY is the US dollar against a basket of fiats. And so if you're on a Bitcoin standard, I mean, you don't really have to care because your purchasing power is increasing versus the monetary debasement. But at the same time, when you hear someone say they're a deflationist or basically the thesis behind buying treasury bonds right now, which sounds absolutely insane, is that the world is on a fiat standard and a majority of that is on a dollar standard, the dollar being the world reserve currency. All those dollars were created through lending. Dollars, every fiat currency is created into existence as a commercial bank lends it into existence. And so you have basically the dollar against other fiats. And if every other central bank is printing, and they're actually, a lot of these banks are printing, the central banks, governments are printing more than the US. And so that dollar index, since kind of COVID and since there was a super spike in the dollar during the COVID in March of 2020, all asset class crash. But since then, you know, since basically the start of 2021, the dollar has actually been rising quite significantly against other currencies. And that matters because eventually there will be a global rush to dollars, and kind of it'll hit everything, including Bitcoin, because you have to remember it's BTC/USD. And if the denominator is rising, even if more people are buying Bitcoin and holding it as ever, well, there's going to be a market impact. And so that's something that we also kind of pay attention to, is the relationship between the dollar. Like, you know, the world needs dollars. Everybody's up to their eyeballs in dollar denominated debt. And in a fractionally reserved system, it's kind of a game of musical chairs about, you know, who can pay their debts, especially a lot of times, like the US dollar offshore market is so large that that's kind of probably where it's going to happen or start. And so, you know, at some point we'll see this kind of everything bubble and you'll start to see it burst. And Bitcoin will crash and the stock market will crash and the real estate market will crash. And then it's the governments and central banks in the US, but also globally, because it'll induce a global recession when these credit bubbles pop, like what happened in 08, kind of what we saw last year, although it was more of a government thing where they shut things down. But if the US dollar spikes, the world goes into recession. And so then every central bank is left with the same decision they've been left with for the last decade, which is to print their currencies into oblivion. And so that's the Bitcoin thesis on the other end, is that we know Bitcoin's going to go up forever because they have to do this. But another kind of macroeconomic event where the dollar goes ballistic upwards in value and every other asset on the planet crashes, it'll happen again. It's just a matter of when. And so that's kind of why, you know, say the dollar matters, even though a lot of like Bitcoiners are like, why care?
Wait, but you said Bitcoin crashed in that situation. Do you think that Bitcoin would crash like short term and then correct quicker than everything else and then have high upside?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's just at a certain point, it's like, I mean, it's what we saw last year.
Right.
It took a little bit longer to respond because like under the surface, there was a lot of
Did it? I mean, I feel like last year
we were grinding at 9K.
I feel like last year, feel like what last year showed was that Bitcoin was the only thing that was even resembled a free market, and they had circuit breakers and everything else for all the other bullshit. But with Bitcoin, we corrected down very significantly, or we crashed down very significantly, very fast. We went back up way quicker than everything else, and then we continued upwards while everything else was going much slower paces.
That's what I observed.
There was $15 million on the order books on BitMEX from the price to zero. Like the entire long side of the order book was literally obliterated, and then Arthur cut the cord.
Well, no, he never admitted to it. He never admitted to cutting the cord. That's a conspiracy theory that they shut down BitMEX to stop us going to zero on BitMEX.
I mean, it might have gone, I think it would have gone to zero on BitMEX.
Yeah, I think he did it, but it's a conspiracy theory. He's never admitted to doing it.
Are you guys saying that Arthur saved Bitcoin?
I had bids that
he definitely saved us from a lot of cringe headlines, that's for sure.
So is it a free market or not, Odell? I can't tell.
Well, the thing is, like, if you're a holder, if like you're holding your own keys and using your own node, then you were unaffected by that. Like, he could have just let it go to zero. Like, I remember March 12th vividly. I saw the price falling down. Was I on Twitter scrolling? No. I turned off my phone. I turned off my computer. And me and my lady went downstairs and we watched a movie. And I woke up the next morning and Bitcoin was still there. And there was nothing. I wasn't going to sell. I wasn't going to do anything. I just sat tight and I was fine. But if you were leveraged on BitMEX, I mean, there were a lot of people that got blown the fuck out. There were a lot of people that got blown the fuck out if they were leveraged on BlockFi or Unchained Capital or any of the different leverage providers. And they were rushing to put funds in to try and not get margin called. But if you were just a humble holder, you were unaffected. But if you were on BitMEX and you had a huge leverage position, then you should be very grateful that Arthur presumably just pulled that plug.
Stay humble, stack sats.
Yeah, and what's really interesting during that time too is like there wasn't a lot of change in the long-term holder supply. I mean, it went down some, but not as much as you would think during that period. It went down way more when people took profits at the previous all-time high. So my takeaway in terms of that, a lot of the long-term holder conviction, as we've seen a lot of times, is that conviction is extremely high during those drawdowns and that period of volatility, which helps hold that floor for the level of what Bitcoin's at.
So I want to bring it back to this idea of like, what does the future of this cycle hold? One of the big dynamics of why this time actually is different is that a lot of the hash rate is being controlled by public miners who are publicly not selling and leveraging equity and other finance and other financing in order to kind of manage their OPEX and CAPEX costs related to actually mining their Bitcoin. I pinned to the top Sam's tweet from yesterday, kind of just showing the chart of the known public miners and their known accumulation. Do we want to talk a little bit about this dynamic again? And I guess maybe how it plays into what the future of price holds?
Yeah. I'm happy to start with this. We wrote some of this and we've been writing in the daily dive, and kind of issue 99 was a, kind of a mining overview where we talked about this dynamic with Hut 8. But in that chart, that's even changed since Bitfarms, you know, came out with their, I published that before they even came out with their earnings, where their Bitcoin that they've been holding or that they're held now on their balance sheet is up 5x than what it was in the first quarter. And so whenever you look at these public miners on a monthly production update basis or quarterly earnings basis, the strategy now is all about acquiring Bitcoin in a long-term HODL strategy. And I mean, one, you know, they've been able to do that because it's been more profitable to, you know, so you can raise whether it's equity or debt. Or the dynamic we talked about with Hut 8 is they're essentially taking, you know, 40% of their 5,000 Bitcoin stack, and they're putting 1,000 with Genesis Global Capital and 1,000 with Galaxy Digital, and they're loaning it out to the market. And they're making, earlier in the year, they're making, you know, 4.2% to 2.25%. The interest rates kind of dropped with less big vertical notes that Marathon, and even that had increased demand from when they announced 500 million, now it's up to 650 million. Is they're just being able to take this type of, whether, you know, speculative attack type capital on the US dollar and use that right away for their OPEX cost. And in turn, you know, the shareholders who are getting some level of Bitcoin exposure are just saying Bitcoin. So it's just an interesting dynamic to see that start to play out all this year. And it seems like they're not slowing down anytime soon with what they're trying to put in their Bitcoin treasuries, which is just going to have less sell pressure on the market. We saw even this year, miners sending Bitcoin to exchanges is just like two different paradigms from the first half of the year to the second half of the year. Now it's just completely different. So overall, less sell pressure coming in.
But do we think that is, I mean, I like to think that like MicroStrategy and then Tesla, mostly Saylor, like kind of showed these public companies that they can really improve their stock value by holding Bitcoin and have kind of incentivized them to basically signal to the market that they're going to hold Bitcoin long term and they're going to accumulate as much Bitcoin as possible, particularly for the fact that we do not have a spot ETF. Like, everyone's getting super excited about ETFs, but they're all based on cash based futures. So these mining companies offer you a venue to basically speculate on Bitcoin price without having a spot Bitcoin ETF, which is comparable to the gold sector, where there's a lot of gold people who are like, I will not buy like GLD, like some of these paper gold ETFs, but I'll buy gold miners because I know they have gold in the ground. So like, it works very well with that normal narrative for investors. But that's all been happening in basically this massive bull market. So like, I do wonder like if there are actually strong hands. Like, I kind of feel like if we don't have a super cycle here, which I will continue to repeat, you should not assume there's going to be a super cycle here. You should assume there's going to be an 85% drawdown. And if there isn't one, be happy about it, because you shouldn't be trying to time tops and you should be just fucking accumulating Bitcoin. If we end up in another 85% drawdown period, as we have every other cycle, these guys are going to fucking panic and start fucking unloading bags. Like, I really do not expect them to be strong hands.
And it's, we have not even a matter of will at that point. They have to.
I mean, Matt, didn't
why do they have to?
To keep their business afloat. Are you talking about miners?
Yeah, Dylan, I'm not a corporate miner. I mean, I don't know. I would never own ASICs, or maybe I have ASICs. I don't know. But if I did own ASICs, I'm not a corporate miner. Like, I'm just accumulating sats. Like, I'm not going to sell. But these large miners, like, I think they will fold very quickly. Like, if the market turns on them, they're gonna start dumping hard.
Hey, Matt, why didn't we trade down to like 10,000 this summer instead? Since, I mean, the cycle could have easily been over then. We could have gone from 64-ish down to like 10,000, gotten that 80% down you're looking for. I mean, after all, we had what could have been the bull cycle. I mean, that logic doesn't hold up, because here's the thing that I'm trying to push forward as an idea. Everything you think you know about why Bitcoin traded in the last 10 years is fundamentally wrong. The major reason you had 85% drawdowns is people who had money looked at Bitcoin as an illegitimate asset, which was a non-starter investment. People with money just didn't want to buy it. That was the reason. It had nothing to do with strong hands, not strong hands. And there's an ocean of money and an ocean of buyers who look at it differently. Now, maybe this is the top of the cycle. Maybe now we go down to 10,000, because after all, we hit 65.
No, we're not going down to 10,000. I'm not saying 10,000. First of all, Tina, my Spaces is completely glitchy and it doesn't show you as a speaker, but I love you so much that as soon as you speak, I knew exactly who was speaking to me. So I just wanted to say,
are you going to call me a bear?
I miss you.
For you, Matt.
Yeah, last time I called you a bear, we went to a 50% drawdown, but that's the only way to handle you, because you try and overbull people, they're going to try and overbull you. That's what they're going to try and do.
What if Bitcoin bores you to $1 million in the next 3 or 4 months?
No, when I say 85% drawdown, I mean we hit, 450, 500, and then we do an 85% drawdown back to where we are today.
What if it's 500 in 2023?
I would say that the big miners were watching that 30K support and they were scared. Like, if we breached that shit, they would have fucking panicked. And long term, does that matter? No, there is no alternative. I know you're not a woman. Tina means there is no alternative. I'm well aware of that. I believe that. I live that. But they were on the verge of panicking.
But it doesn't matter, because here's the thing. You have an entire class of investors, because you've got the likes of NYDIG bringing in new investors. So they're going to have people, if they get this to work, there will be people who will be able to buy Bitcoin at their bank in 2022. You'll have pension funds and insurance companies who are looking to buy. And it is this gradual. So I've reframed this. I like the notion that Bitcoin was perceived from the perspective of wealthy investors, i.e. people typically 40-ish to 70-ish, as an illegitimate asset last decade. It's transforming to a legitimate asset now, and ultimately will be a must-own asset. And that transformation process, we could be living that right now. Bitcoin might be very boring. Maybe we end the year at 80,000 and then we double or triple next year and double or triple after that. And it becomes a very boring asset, because if you look at other markets, there is no reason to assume that Bitcoin has to trade the way it did last decade, because the primary reason it traded like it did last decade is you didn't have buyers who had money. You only had wealthy people who grew wealthy from Bitcoin. You had a very limited market, because most of the world that had money, that were wealthy, like, would your dad have bought Bitcoin in 2016 or 17 or 18 without you?
I mean, he didn't.
You didn't. Right. Because he looked at it and said, I wouldn't buy that shit. Because that's how the world started. We're watching that transformation take place. That, by the way, that was also true with internet stocks. And that was true with tech stocks. We've seen this happen. You haven't. I have. In the last 30 years, where people looked at Amazon. It's a book company. It's got stupid market cap. It's ridiculous. Why would anybody buy that thing? I said that. And I was wrong. And the same with Facebook and Google and lots of things. Google came public in a Dutch auction and traded down because nobody wanted to buy it. So the thing is, markets and people change their attitude about things. And we're watching a transitional process. And I think you could still be right, and we can still get the 85% drawdown. This is a fight I have with American HODL all the time in Clubhouse. But the point is, it's possible that you're not right. And we need to observe the changes. And I've noticed Willy Wu is changing his tone. Even Plan B started to, well, in 2022, things could be a little different. The cycle could extend. And it's not about a super cycle. I hate that goddamn stupid term, super cycle. What if it's just a boring cycle that looks a lot like the FANG stocks? and just goes up 2 or 3x and bores the shit out of you because it doesn't go parabolic like you're hoping, up 10x. The reason Bitcoiners want it to go parabolic and crash is they think they know how to trade it. They think, I figured out the last 10 years. I know what this thing does. I'll get more because I'll sell the top and I'll buy the bottom. That's the reason Bitcoiners love the narrative, go parabolic and crash.
But that's not true. That's not true with me. It's not true with me, though. It's not true with me.
Everybody else. It's true.
Let me jump in here real quick. So Bitcoin Tina and I recorded a 5-part series called Bitcoin Tina on Bitcoin. We cover a lot of what Tina just said at length. It's 5 hours total over 5 series. So I highly recommend everyone here go listen to that. Go to your podcast app. Go to Bitcoin Magazine YouTube. Type in Bitcoin Tina on Bitcoin. Pretty easy to find. I want to turn it back to Dylan. Tina, you're bringing up some interesting points, again, on this kind of thread that is Bitcoin a legitimate asset? Have things changed? Do these miners change? Do institutions have different buying behavior? Are the cycles less important? I think the point that, you know, the people who were rich in Bitcoin in the past, for the most part, were people who got rich off Bitcoin, whereas, you know, this time around, you know, we're seeing a lot of rich people buy Bitcoin and they don't necessarily ever have to sell, even if it does drop down a lot.
Because they only buy like 1 or 2 or 3%. That's why. Or maybe at most 10%. They're not putting 100% of their money into Bitcoin. So insane. Some of us on this.
Yeah, so no, I agree. And again, everyone, go listen to Bitcoin Tina on Bitcoin. I want to turn it back to Dylan and Sam, who both are working at UTXO, which is a fund that's, you know, a Bitcoin denominated fund. You know, they're trying to navigate the quote unquote cycle. And that's something that's a big priority for UTXO right now is like, you know, trying to figure out what's happening. What's kind of the mentality there? And what are the different factors that UTXO is kind of considering as it looks towards the back end of this year?
Yeah, so we're looking at the data like every single day. And I think just when you think about a Bitcoin cycle, like what defines a Bitcoin cycle and why does something like on-chain analytics, which some people think is you know, really high signal and some people think is voodoo nonsense, why are we even looking at the data in the first place? And it's because historically, and maybe it doesn't happen again, Bitcoin bull markets are reflexive in the sense that you have hodlers not selling. You have a bunch of new capital coming in, and basically price gets bid at the margin for, you know, a little bit of Bitcoin, a little bit, could be millions or hundreds of thousands, but you have so much capital coming in and the incumbent owners of the asset class just aren't selling. So price goes parabolic relative to what hodlers acquired at. Basically, like if you want to think of like the average on-chain cost basis, like of every Bitcoin that's ever moved, you know, what's the average price it was acquired at? That's like, you know, we look at that. That's called realized price. Is it a perfect signal? No. There are some uneconomic spends. So like if I just send Bitcoin to myself, which I've done in the last week, that Bitcoin on chain is classified as being acquired at a higher price. But there is a lot of signal in stuff like this when you're looking at cycle to cycle, how overheated is something. A bull market is kind of defined by the price going parabolic relative to the realized price or like the on-chain cost basis. So we kind of quantify these things and do a risk reward trend. And basically we want to be always long this asset, but when is the best time to acquire some more or allocate more capital or maybe use a little bit of leverage because we think the risk reward is that attractive, whether it's a local kind of market bottom or you know, more of a protracted bull bear trend.
But the thing about Bitcoin is a truly scarce asset, the most scarce asset we've ever had. And it trades in the most free market we've ever had. So to me, and Peter Rizzo has an interesting framing of this. He calls Bitcoin cycle tops psychological attacks on Bitcoiners. And basically what happens is when Bitcoin's dumping, there's a lot of people trying to sell Bitcoin. And we dump harder than a traditional asset would dump. But when Bitcoin's pumping, like people hold on to their coins and they feel FOMO. They wish they had more Bitcoin. And there hits a point where like a critical mass of people all try and exit their Bitcoin position. And that's when we have these massive blow off tops. And I really find it hard to believe that we're past that point. And I will promise you, though, that when we're near that point of the blow off top, I will believe we are past that point because that is what has happened the last couple of times. As soon as we're very close to it, I will believe that hyper Bitcoinization is upon us, and that the super cycle is here. And I will not sell, but I will be tricked at that point. I will be tricked. Matt.
My fellow plebs, the Bitcoin conference is back. Bitcoin 2022, April 6th through the 9th, is the ultimate pilgrimage for the Bitcoin ecosystem. The Bitcoin conference is the biggest event in all of Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. We're leveling up and making this bigger and better than ever. I'm talking straight to the moon with the 4-day long festival in the heart of Miami at the Miami Beach Convention Center. This has something for everyone. Whether you're a high-powered Bitcoin entrepreneur, a core developer, or a Bitcoin newbie, Bitcoin 2022 is the ultimate place for you to be with your people and celebrate and learn about the Bitcoin culture. So make sure to go to b.tc/conference to lock in your official tickets and use promo code Satoshi for 10% off. Want more off? Pay in Bitcoin and you'll receive $100 off general admission and $1,000 off whale pass. Those are stackable. So go to b.tc/conference and attend the best conference in Bitcoin history. Yo, my fellow Bitcoin lovers, have I got something specifically curated for you? The Deep Dive is Bitcoin Magazine's premium markets intelligence newsletter. This isn't some paid group shilling buy and sell signals. No, this is a premium Bitcoin analysis led by Dylan LeClaire and his team of analysts. They break down in an easily digestible way what is happening on chain, in the derivatives markets, and in the greater macro backdrop context for Bitcoin. This newsletter turns volatility into a joke. So hit up members.bitcoin.magazine.com and use promo code podcast for 30% off the Deep Dive. That's members.bitcoinmagazine.com, promo code podcast for 30% off. Divorce your pay group and learn why Bitcoin is the strongest asset by Dylan and LeClaire and his team.
Matt, as a friend of mine, CK Snarks, said a long time ago, which I love to repeat all the time because it conveys so much signal, this is hyper-Bitcoinization. Hyper-Bitcoinization, despite what Krawitz had to say, is not a destination. Hyper-Bitcoinization is a process and a road to travel on. We are in hyper-Bitcoinization right now. It started when the white paper dropped. That is hyper-Bitcoinization. We are in it. Everything that we see is hyper-Bitcoinization. It is the process of monetization. It is the process of the world, not everybody, coming to understand Bitcoin. Those who understand it earliest and best have the most of it and will profit. And those who think they can play games may suffer pretty dramatically. By the way, I have a view where we could, and this is just speculation on my part, be boring on the way to $1 million. And then have what I'm now calling billionaire FOMO, when very rich people start to realize, oh crap, I don't own enough of that. They realize they have to own 25 or 50%, and they FOMO in. And you watch Bitcoin do what Tesla did, except from a very high level, $500,000, $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, and go up 5 or 10x inside of a year. The billionaire FOMO. And it doesn't come down from there. That would have been the number three trade that I called the hardest trade. And people have to chase it, and they do, because other people come to understand what we understand today, that Bitcoin is the must-own asset. And here's the thing. We have to humble ourselves, just like Wall Street doesn't humble themselves and doesn't understand that they don't know a lot about any of this, and they haven't focused on Bitcoin enough. We have to humble ourselves to accept that they will figure out what we have already figured out, and I guarantee they will. And it's process. We are watching a changing process. It is so important to understand, in my opinion, that we are a leading edge, but we're not that special. Other people figure things out. There are smart people that will figure things out. Look, I figured it out. I figured it out in 2017, 2018, that I really wanted to own Bitcoin. I'm not that much smarter than these other people, and neither are you. And neither is anybody listening or anybody on the stage or anybody who might listen. We're not that much smarter. Other smart people who have money will figure it out because they'll say, oh, Bitcoin is neutral money. And as such, see, the fundamental problem with altcoins, here's the quintessential problem. It is not tribalism, not with regard to Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is neutral. It's not tribal. That argument that this is tribalism is completely wrong and misplaced. The other coins compete against each other and will eat each other. They are bitter enemies of one another, and they all must come to Bitcoin to own the neutral money. Bitcoin is the neutral money, and they will come to that. Second, watching price action jump up and down is not network effects. Just like you would not say that GameStop and AMC are network effects, neither is shitcoin trading network effects. Despite what some people might say and like to tell you, network effects, BS, it's not. Trading price, just like AMC going to stupid levels and GameStop going to stupid levels, is not network effects. That's garbage. And there's no real finance happening there. That's also garbage.
Can we call it illiquidity? Tina, while I totally agree that this is hyper-Bitcoinization, and that's my quote, but I do like what Odell, you know, was kind of referencing with Pete Rizzo's idea that at some point the reflexivity pushes people to the point that they think, this is it. We're going parabolic. We're never going, no one's ever going to sell again. Bitcoin's never going to crash. And you know, potentially that's when things get nasty. You know, again, it's difficult to tell if it's going to happen again this time or not. I'm kind of curious in the last 15 minutes, if the people on the panel, like if they want to reflect on maybe like signs that they're looking for that things are going to get a little wonky or crazy. I know that there's been a lot of frustration with Bitcoin's price action thus far, even amongst our good friend Pete Rizzo, who's like, what the heck is happening with the price? It needs to start moving. So I'm kind of curious what, I guess, people's expectations are. Maybe are there frustrations with the fact that Bitcoin is pretty much at its average Mayer multiple or multiple off of the 200-day moving average versus, you know, something a lot higher? What's kind of the take here between Sam or Dylan?
I can just share my thoughts. Yeah, I mean, I'm not frustrated in the sense of like, if you're looking at a long-term horizon, you're looking at year-to-date returns or over the last year, over the last 4 to 5 years, it's just still incredibly impressive. And like, I will probably have diminishing returns over time with Bitcoin, but in no way do I look at this and say, oh, you know, I'm concerned about where the cycle is going. I think there's a lot of top metrics that Dylan, you know, talked about a few that we're looking with the UTXO and just looking at on-chain perspective. I mean, one that I look at a lot is people who hold a lot of coins. What type of profit levels are they taking right now? And what are they going to take in the future? I know it's difficult to time tops or figure it out, but typically we see a lot when price goes in this type of parabolic moves. We want to monitor that level of profit taking to see how much people are taking off the table or how much they're holding and kind of where that conviction's at. So that's something I'll be keeping a close eye on as we go over the next few months.
I'd chime in there too, just not concerned too much with the price, because I find that the more you focus on it, the more you kind of are, you know, subliminally like priming yourself to make a trade out of the greatest asset of all time. This is, as Tina said, it's like neutral to us. It doesn't respond to us. It doesn't care about our markets. It doesn't make sense to me to think that I can outthink it or trade it. I plan to do nothing, you know. I mean, it's hard to tell like what you will actually do when you see that 2-3x and, you know, like that story Rizzo tells, you walk out of a restaurant and you've lost half your net worth because you didn't sell the top or time it. But that's what you got to try to do. You got to hold on to your asset. So just my two sets.
Also, I am loving watching the price lovingly float around 60K. It just keeps trying to dip back down, and I'm buying sets. I just smash bought.
I mean, the bare minimum, I think the easiest thing anybody can do, not bare minimum, but, you know, daily, weekly, maybe monthly auto DCA, literally, if you can only afford $5, do it. Everybody should be doing that. I mean, if you're producing any sort of value in this world, then you should try to aim to, you know, consume a little bit less than you produce. And it'd be a good idea to, you know, save some of that excess in sats.
But by do nothing, I meant buy only. I meant do not sell. Definitely buy.
All right. What do we think? Are we going to crack through 60? Are we going to get an even better buying opportunity?
I hope so. I have some limit orders at 58, but you know, if those don't hit, then I'll be forced to move them up.
Dylan, I'm disappointed you still have fiat left.
Oh, we just cracked 60.
I may have borrowed some money.
Only some? Are you kidding me? Got to go way harder than that. Take out personal loans.
Yeah, I'm going to go 100x leverage.
Stay humble, P.
I'm totally joking. No one should invest more than their conviction allows. The last thing you want to do is put yourself in a position where you have to sell your Bitcoin because you were an idiot and you were over leveraged. Do not screw yourself over. This is the most precious asset that any of us will ever have.
I'll give a hat tip to Tina here, and Tina's advice, and maybe he can reiterate it, is that you should hold what you can actually hold, because this thing is going to go to the moon. You probably need less than you think you need, and the right amount is the amount that you can comfortably not sell. And if you're in a position where, you know, month to month to make ends meet, you potentially need to liquidate something, maybe consider holding a little bit less, put yourself in a safer, more secure financial condition. So I don't know if Tina wants to elaborate on that.
I agree with that. And I would tell you, look, I hold a irresponsibly large position, and it's better to sell some than to borrow in an asset that's marked to market. I mean, think about this. Let's say you take a 20% loan to value and something happens. We know how volatile this asset can be. I mean, it can go down a lot. It doesn't mean it stays down, but it can, or things can happen. What's the math on that 20%? You could lose 5 times as much as what you're borrowing, or even 30%. You'd lose 3.3 times as much as what you're borrowing. So particularly if you're younger, which I'm not, you have time on your side. And so you want to be conservative about it in the sense that, yes, you want to have as much as you can, but you don't want to get blown out of your position. I do believe that the surprise will come to people in the future. When I was reading about Weimar, Mark Faber had written a piece like in 2006, and I'm not saying that this is Weimar, I'm just using this as an example. The value of several things, people traded a lot of crap. I think it was gold, but I don't really remember. It went down so much because at different points in time, the government said different things, which caused the markets to react, and the markets were incredibly violent. If you're positioned to get knocked out of your position because of violent moves, you're doing it wrong. You don't want to get knocked out. You don't want to look back in 10 and 20 years and say, I was in the best trade of all time and I fucked it up. You just don't want to say that. It is so important to not say that. You need to be able to hold on to this thing, because 30 years from now, it's like fissionable material. It's explosive in its value. And we don't really know the numbers. The numbers are going to be huge. Bitcoin will be the biggest market in the world. And I don't think that makes an impact on people. Not really. Not the way it should. How incredibly valuable this thing is. So you need to do what you can at all costs to be able to hold on to it. And if that means holding a little bit less, because that makes you a better hodler and a stronger holder, that's what you need to do, because it's just so incredibly valuable. And I'm telling you, I may or may not be there to see it, but you will look back 30 years from now and you will say, thank God I was able to hold on to this thing. And I think what we think of as relatively small amounts today will just be incredibly valuable. And it'll be amazing if you could actually hold on to it. If you can make it through your own personal greed, your own, you know, whatever, you know, those things that you think you want, it's going to be so easy to fall prey to that greed and desire. That's what shitcoiners are doing now. They think they know what they're doing. And they think they're smart because they're doing well. But there can be a time that comes where they, in the course of 5 months, 6 months, a year, get vaporized in their positions, because Bitcoin moves up so much and just attracts so much capital that they think they were rich and they just watch it evaporate. And they think that it was the same game that they thought they knew, but the game changed on them and they didn't know the game. Bitcoin will crash upwards. Its natural state is to crash upwards. Just like things that are overly debt-laden crash to the downside. We've seen this in markets. We've seen companies evaporate, just lose enormous amounts of value. And I remember watching Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns decline, thinking, even knowing better, thinking, oh, you could buy this, you could buy the bottom. And there was no bottom in these things. Bear Stearns only had a bottom because there was a deal that was done, but it had no bottom. They went to zero, effectively. And Bitcoin, because of what it is, as people understand it, which they will, it wants to go higher. It wants to crash up. These people who trade Bitcoin like idiots, the whales that we talk about, these are people who will actually probably not hold that much. They will sell into it. They will lose their position because they think they understand this game. The game's going to change on them.
Tina, I have
they're
a question
not going to understand it, and they're going to lose it. Shoot.
So I agree that selling Bitcoin for dollars at any point is somewhat of an idiotic move. But is it idiotic if someone at, say, 42K or whatever it was on May 18th saw the entire side of the derivative order book levering up increasingly long as the price was drifting further, and that idiot took 10,000 Bitcoin that he had and market sold it, and the derivative market liquidated out to 30K in a matter of an hour? Is that bear whale an idiot, or is he just a smart capital allocator that took advantage of a dislocation and got more Bitcoin?
He's lucky.
Is he lucky?
Don't confuse luck and brains. Seriously. It's so dangerous in markets. There's a wonderful book, and we don't like him anymore, Fooled by Randomness. And you need to read it because there is valuable information in there. Just because he became an idiot and didn't learn from his own writing doesn't mean that you can't.
There's two sides.
Don't be fooled by randomness.
Tina, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, but there's two sides, Dylan. Like, you have to – not only do you have to sell – I mean, it's easy in hindsight. Not only do you have to sell 44, you also have to buy back in at 30 without thinking it's going to go lower. And the overwhelming majority of people who try and do that get absolutely wrecked. So, people need to be really cautious trying to trade this shit.
Don't forget taxes, Matt.
You got to pay taxes. Yeah. You got to use KYC exchanges. You got to go back through the regulated moat and then come back out. Who knows? In a crazy Bitcoin environment, I will admit that I've been calling for this for a long fucking time and have been wrong so far. In a crazy regulated environment where Bitcoin starts mooning really hard, like, those on-ramps could get closed off, and you might not even be able to secure Bitcoin. You might be able to get exposure to Bitcoin, but will you actually be able to withdraw it back to your wallets? That's another question.
We agree on that, by the way. I think that is a possibility. If you don't have in part of your thinking that you might not be able to buy it back, you're thinking about it wrong. You need to think in an adversarial way. That is a possibility. I've thought about this myself, and I agree with what Matt just said. He's right. That it doesn't mean it will happen, but it could happen, and you do need to think about that, which is, again, why you have to decide how much you want to own. You know, you want to be able to survive that. I don't necessarily take my own advice, but this is really important. I am probably the mistakes I've made as being overly optimistic short run, so I will freely admit to my mistakes. I actually would have thought we'd be higher by now. So I will freely admit that I thought that. So I make the same mistakes others make.
What else? Joe, you had raised your hand, pulled you up. What you got?
Yeah, no, I was enjoying a great discussion back and forth. And I do agree with Tina's points and some of the others that have been raised as well about, you know, the need to hold on your coins and withstand these violent swings. But I will also emphasize what I think Tina will agree with, that there is a real risk that Bitcoiners, particularly ones that don't really understand what they hold, could potentially be distracted by the shiny objects. And I think that there is a risk from letting go of your coins, not out of fear or greed, but also letting go of them out of boredom. I think that's really going to weigh heavily on this market. I think, you know, the idea that Tina's bringing it, yes, we can absolutely definitely crash upwards, but we might, as an asset class matures, just have slow and steady 50% compounded annual growth rates. We might do that for a couple of years before it really takes off. And during those periods where you've got these other coins popping off, you know, 10, 15, 20X, it's very dangerous because I think you're tempted to engage in shitcoinery. And that can really be disastrous for people. It can make them part ways with a ton of Bitcoin. So I think don't underestimate the aspect of boredom really playing on you and influencing you to, you know, want to chase after the shiny object. I think that's huge. And I do think that as a community with a maturing asset class, you're likely to see that. It makes perfect sense. You know, look at traditional legacy markets. You tend to see really the blue chips. Yes, they'll have big quarters or big, you know, individual gap days, but ultimately they're slow and steady up and to the right. And there's no reason why Bitcoin can't take a similar path. And I think Tina's outlined this in previous times when I've heard him speak.
Look at the difference between Soros and Buffett. And a lot of people got really rich with Buffett, but Soros was an exciting trader. But a lot of people would have looked at the Buffett portfolio and said it's boring. And this is the message, one of the messages I'm trying to give people right now, that it's possible that you could have a boring Bitcoin market for a few years. Because I think it kind of has to percolate and cook to get to the point where you get that billionaire FOMO, where those people aren't really fully paying attention yet, but it starts to get more and more attention and you begin to separate the wheat from the chaff and they really develop some understanding. But it can be boring for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years and does well. And then you lose your focus and your attention shifts to the shiny object. You trade out of it thinking you can get back. And then something happens you don't understand and it moves and you own a fraction of what you owned. This is, I think, going to be one of the bigger risks to Bitcoiners and HODLers. And I've been trying to send the message now for a while that we could be moving into a decade where you are your biggest risk to holding your Bitcoin for any number of reasons. You try to trade it, you get bored, you're not happy or satisfied. I mean, I think there are a lot of Bitcoiners who are dissatisfied with their returns, and particularly newer people. Look, I'm relatively new. I'm quite happy with my returns in the last, 4 years. I think they're great. I'm comparing them to the S&P and to the NASDAQ, not to what shitcoins are doing, because I don't think those are real markets. I think they're BS markets. And they're too hard to trade. And there is so much value in internal compounding. And that is how you get rich, by the way, compounding. And understanding what this is and the real network effects that are building in this thing, Lightning and Bitcoin in El Salvador, you're going to see, I think, with just a small country dealing with Lightning, I think you're going to see innovation coming out of that country. I believe that country will move forward because of this. I hope it does. I mean, I hope so for their sake. I hope so for our sake. And if that's right, maybe in 2022 or 2023, you get more countries that want to do this. You'll get more innovation. Those are real network effects. That's super sticky. That's real. And you're going to get real innovation out of that as people using this stuff are bumping up against real world problems and finding solutions. That's real stuff. That's meaningful stuff. Nobody talks about this, but it's real. And it matters so much. And it's so much stickier than the crap that we hear about DeFi, which just makes me want to puke because it's nonsense.
I would just add, I mean, first of all, in every bull market, everyone thinks they're a genius. So just humble yourself a little bit. I agree with pretty much everything Tina said. I would just, and what Joe said, I would just add that it's not just shit coins that allure you in the boredom. It's also leveraged Bitcoin trading. Most who do either will get absolutely wrecked. Yes, there'll be people that have wins, but most will not be able to time tops, time bottoms. They'll get liquidated. And at the end of the day, most people are just better off just staying humble and stacking sats. Brad, why don't you tell us about all the times you got absolutely fucking wrecked?
Yes.
Yeah, tell that's us about why those I came times. Up.
I love you, Dylan. Cheers.
Dylan has to go. Peace, guys. Is that what he said?
All right, Dylan. Adios. As always.
Take care, Dylan.
Your voice is appreciated.
If you want more Dylan, subscribe to The Deep Dive. Same with Sam.
Yeah, I just wanted to share an anecdote, I guess, from my own personal journey of like holding Bitcoin since 2011 and making a lot of mistakes. And what Tina was saying earlier actually is what happened to me in the last 2 years. I'd say I kind of realized that just for my own personal self, I didn't have strong enough hands to hold on to the percentage of my portfolio in Bitcoin that I thought I could. And I was actually getting like physical stress pains when the price would drop. And I was trying to do all kinds of different like therapies and like meditation and all kinds of like different things to try to deal with it, reading, learning about the markets and all that stuff. But I just couldn't get rid of this like physical back pain that was whenever the price would drop or even when the price would rise. I would just feel this really unique, stressful pain in my back that I've never felt before. It was like for a good year. And it was, I think, Mandrick who said, you might just have too much Bitcoin. Like you might have too much percentage of your portfolio in Bitcoin. Maybe just sell a little bit. And I'm like, you know, you kind of go through that, the mentality of like, I'm exiting the broken system for a better system. I'm leaving bad money for good money. I'm never going back to dollars. Like that is the mentality. But it does sometimes, I don't know, like Tina was saying, it can help if you think you're not going to be able to hold on to the thing, like rather than trying to hold on and then just cracking and selling it all, like a lot of people end up doing. They're just like, oh, I can't deal with this. And they sell all their Bitcoin. And then a few years later, they regret it. Just try to learn better risk management strategies. And if you need to lighten your load a little bit because you can't hold, you can't handle it, like there's nothing wrong with that. Although now I'm in this position where I did that and I'm like, damn it, I wish I had that Bitcoin back, but I don't have the back pain. I made the decision that I would keep enough of percentage of my net worth in Bitcoin that like if it goes to $1 million, like we all think it's going to do eventually in the next at least 10 years, you know, if it succeeds as a global reserve currency, it's not going to matter if I sold 5% or 10% of my Bitcoin. It's going to be well worth holding on to Bitcoin, even if I sold a little bit to get rid of the temptation to try to do something with the whole stack. Casa has also been really helpful putting most of your Bitcoin into multi-sig long-term storage. So, you know, your degenerate FOMO sapien tendencies cannot tempt you to go into shit coins when the market's pumping or whatever, or leverage your Bitcoin, try to make stupid trades. I lost half my Bitcoin in 2011 thinking I was a smart trader. I bought at 10 and I sold at 30, half my Bitcoin thinking that was such a great trade. I just like made 2 or 3x on my cuck bucks. It was great. So I think it's just like being in the market for a long time, learning all the mistakes. It's better to actually outsource your conviction and your mistake learning. So I would just say that the last 8 months has been way easier to deal with this volatile market and all the China FUD and the energy FUD and the shitcoin bubble by hanging out in Clubhouse with people like Tina and P and like all the folks in Clubhouse, like American HODL's over there. Outsourcing your conviction and having group therapy sessions in volatile times, it's been awesome. So I highly recommend people just join us over in Clubhouse and hang out, learn more about why Bitcoin's important. And
Brad, why don't you tell us about like your shitcoin issues too?
Well, the shitcoin issues, I think anybody that lived through 2017, like the ICO bubble and all that stuff, and then lived through the bear market, I think we all learned a really valuable lesson there that in bubbles, you can get sucked into the FOMO of these network effect narratives and the shitcoin narratives. And especially it's even worse now with like celebrities and stuff like that endorsing this stuff. But I don't see any difference really fundamentally between what happened in the 2018-19 bubble when most of the stuff ended up getting completely wrecked and what's going to end up happening when the macro market conditions change and everybody's looking for the exits on these new narratives. Like NFTs, people are going to go back and look at the NFT bubble as like the stupidest thing humans have ever speculated on to this level. It's going to be looked at in history as the dumbest bubble that's ever existed in humanity. And people are going to look back and be totally ashamed of themselves for promoting these NFTs as investment narratives. And like that combined with all the narratives along with like altcoins and DeFi and everything like that, I'm not saying there's absolutely zero value in this stuff, but I'm saying that like it's very noisy right now and it's very hard to find signal. So thank God we've got like Swan Bitcoin teaching great Bitcoin education, Bitcoin Magazine. Honestly, if we didn't have Bitcoin Magazine doing what they're doing, Swan Bitcoin doing what they're doing, I don't know what I'd be doing. But I'm just so happy that we've got really good Bitcoin education content because it is so important to have people grounded in good information. during these times of speculative FOMO and nonsense. And it's like the signal that I keep coming back to. And honestly, I'm just so appreciative and grateful for the people that are spending their time in a principled way doing the things that teach the lessons about Bitcoin, where they could be spending their money like Raoul Paul and Real Vision. They could be spending their time capitalizing from the bubble and making tens of millions of dollars on shitcoins and sponsorship deals with shitcoin ICO companies and all that stuff. But they've made the principled decision to stick to Bitcoin education, continue spreading the message of Bitcoin, and entrepreneurs like Jack Dorsey that are kind of like giving that signal as well to younger entrepreneurs that you are on the right path here. Like this dot-com bubble 2.0 that we're going through right now is pretty nuts. And if we didn't have all these resources, I think it would be a lot crazier. But I'm glad we're at least in the branch of the universe where Swan Bitcoin, Jack Dorsey, Bitcoin Magazine, and all that exist. If we were in the other branch where it was like Shiba Coin and NFTs, and we didn't have the Bitcoin signal, I mean, it would be pretty crazy.
I look at it a little differently. It's just too hard to do that other stuff. And you won't know it unless you try it. I've done dumb stuff like that over the years in stock trading and the like. And you don't understand how really hard it is. Business is funny. Work's hard. Work's boring in some regard. Some of the best businesses in the world are like an insurance business. Really boring business, but it's an amazingly good business. Bitcoin, holding Bitcoin is really hard, hodling Bitcoin, but it's really good business. And you won't believe me until like 5 and 10 years from now. But if you don't do it right, you're not going to benefit from it. And those other people won't believe me. That's why I don't like to waste my time with them, because they think they know. The problem about markets and doing well in markets is it gives you a big head and a lot of arrogance. And that's a kiss of death for investors and traders, thinking that you think that. You fall, you really get hurt. And the problem is people get locked in by their own greed. That's why cons work. That's why a lot of scams work. That's why things like BitConnect worked, because you get locked in. You keep thinking, I knew a guy, he put $10,000 in. He kept calculating the millions of dollars he was going to make from BitConnect. And he knew better. But he kept calculating the millions of dollars he was going to make from BitConnect.
So, Tina, I want to just give Corey a chance to weigh in. And I think we're going to actually close out the room pretty soon, because we've been going for almost 2 hours now. But Corey, did you have something that you wanted to add into any of the stuff that's been said so far?
Well, I just want to hear how the guy did in BitConnect. Did he make his millions of dollars?
No, he
he lost his $10,000.
I'm just kidding.
It was just ridiculously stupid.
He actually realized that putting his hand in a door, in a car door, and smashing it repeatedly was actually going to be higher yield than the experience that he was having with BitConnect. But Corey, what were you going to jump in and say?
No, I was just going to say like how just cleansing and refreshing it is to hang with my homies in the afternoon after being a guest on a crypto YouTube show this morning and having to sit there quietly as they went through a few TA charts before we could talk some Bitcoin. And, you know, the contrast is just so dramatic because, you know, obviously everything in a room like this and, you know, hopefully everyone in the audience appreciates that everyone's encouraging you to zoom out and not get hung up on the short-term moves. Recognize that this is a long-term accumulation game. You know, I think that's obviously what we're really focused on at Swan and at Mag and all the great companies working on Bitcoin only, like the Rivers and the Unchains and the Casas. Like, we know the game afoot. We know that this is, by the time you hold for 5 years, you're going to hold for 10. By the time you hold for 10, you're never going to sell. So that's kind of the goal here, is build up your conviction, build up your education. It's your knowledge that earns you the right and the willingness to hold through the volatility, which is what's going to make you win in the long term. So that's pretty much it. Be bear proof, build up that bear armor. And it's that bear armor is constructed from conviction. And that conviction is based on actually understanding what the hell is going on here. So love you guys. Know you were planning to shut down the room. Wish I could have talked to you longer, but yeah, glad I at least got to listen to some of it.
All right, my friends, this was super fun. As Matt would say, stay humble, stack sats.
Fuck yes.
Let's fucking go.
Cheers to that.
Bye.